You're listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks, your source for centered and focused play therapy coaching.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brenna Hicks, the kid counselor. This is the Play Therapy Podcast, where you get a masterclass in child-centered play therapy and practical support and application for your work with children and their families. In today's episode, I am doing a three listener question combo. So three of you all reached out about a very similar question. So I'm just going to do it all in one fell swoop. So Naka from England, Anna from Canada, and Grace from California, thank you for your questions. And oh my gosh, look at this. We have, you know, three different countries represented in this question. So that is so encouraging to me too, that all over the world, we are all becoming better child-centered play therapists. So England, Canada, and California, here we go. Thank you very much, Naka, Anna, and Grace. So here is the question as an overarching umbrella, and then I'll actually deal with some specifics that actually came in emails. So each of these ladies is asking me about how to modify, if we do, what to do if we do, modifying child-centered play therapy for tweens and teens. So obviously, you know, the sweet spot of the child-centered model typically ends around 12, but you can extend it to 14 with some modifications with activities instead of just play. And so at my center, we see up to 14 with the child-centered model. And actually, a lot of you all that are reaching out see kids maybe up to 17 and 18. So obviously, teenagers, truly like the 15 and up range, that's kind of a whole different dialogue. But we're specifically talking about kids 14 and under in the, let's say, 11 to 14 year old range, because that tween and early teen section of children can be a little bit tricky because they still want to play and they are still playful and they are still kids, but they also want to be more mature and they're starting to develop abstract reasoning. So they're able to have more discussion-based therapy. And so it's kind of this tricky little water to navigate. So let me start with Anna, who said, for children who are 10 to 12, I find that some of them don't like the playroom anymore. So I adopt a non-directive talk therapy plus games approach, which I find works great. I'm wondering if you only offer the traditional CCPT approach to the population in this age range. So that is from Anna. From Naka, we have the question of, I work with kids up to 18, so this is one specifically where much older kids, but the email specifically says, I'm struggling with options of playthings, games, and what to offer for teenagers aged 12 to 15. And she says, I find it more of an issue with boys than girls. Girls will talk while painting or drawing, but teenage boys seem to present differently. And they will often ask, what are we going to do today? Or what can we do? So I offer, we could paint, draw, do Play-Doh, or make up games. Any suggestions would be greatly appreciated. And she is a mobile play therapist. Actually, I think that's important to point that out. So then she mentions, I would also like to have this knowledge for when I set up a room. So Naka from England, thank you. And then Grace from California says, sometimes I feel stuck with the CCPT model with some of my older kids, especially 12 to 15. How do you know age or maturity-wise when kids are starting to move from benefiting from traditional CCPT to possibly needing more talk therapy with elements of play? I have older kids who come in and may watercolor paint, play with Legos, etc., but immediately start sharing deeper emotional content. Is that when I would start moving into person-centered talk therapy, or is there a way to still consider that CCPT? So, Grace, thank you very much. Thank you to each of you. And if you all have questions, please email me, brenna@thekidcounselor.com, and I will try to cover them. I have quite a backlog at the moment, so I'm sorry it's taking a little while to get to you, but I promise I will either respond via email or I will cover it in an episode. So let's talk through the 11 to 14 or 15 year old range for a little bit, because this really is something that can be a little bit tricky to navigate. So let me begin by sharing some important statistical data with you. You know how much I love data-driven analysis. So they did this really amazing study that showed that if people are using their hands actively, And it does not matter what they're doing. So that is an important note. They can be making a duct tape ball. They can be doodling on paper. They can be unbending a paper clip, squeezing a stress ball. It honestly does not matter what they're doing. But if their hands are actively engaged doing something, they actually wired the brain and watched what was going on while individuals were using their hands, and their inhibitions were lessened. They were more likely to have conversations. They were less likely to be hesitant about sharing personal things. So there is a very distinct correlation between active hands and a person's ability to share and be open and vulnerable and discuss things that they need to talk about. So with that understanding, and with the understanding that kids don't develop abstract reasoning until about the age of 13 or so, we have this very interesting dynamic where an 11, 12, 13, 14-year-old, they kind of want to talk, but it's still really uncomfortable, and it's still not their natural form of communicating, and it's still not where they would naturally land. So if we give them the opportunity to talk about whatever they choose while they're doing something else, it still adheres to the child-centered model. We are not directing that they have to talk. We are not directing that they have to do an activity. We leave it completely open-ended. We return responsibility, but we allow them to be doing something so that if they want to talk, they can. That is the goal. I've had tweens and teens come in and smack Bobo, not punch it aggressively, not knock it over. But sorry, if you're not familiar with our terms in the U.S., maybe you don't know what Bobo is. So it's a bop bag. We typically refer to him as Bobo in the States, but it is one of those weighted at the bottom inflatable things that you hit and it goes down to the floor and it pops back up. So bop bag, Bobo, whatever you choose to call him. I had a kid that would just gently hit it so that it would lean over and pop back up. And then he would hit it and it would lean over and pop back up. And he stood in the middle of my room for the entire 50 minutes talking to me while he was hitting Bobo about halfway down to the ground and letting him come back up, hit him again, let him come back up. Talking. I've had kids sit in a chair and throw a ball against a wall and catch it for 50 minutes straight while they talk to me about things. I've had kids doodle in the sand tray with their finger for 50 minutes straight while they talk to me about things. So I'm giving you those examples because I want you to understand if their hands are busy, they are more comfortable and more likely to share things verbally. So we don't ever want to think that just because the child is 11 through 14, that they need to just sit and talk. That's actually very incorrect. It's not developmentally appropriate. It is not sensitive to their natural form of communication. So what we want to do is create the same exact scenario, same exact environment. You're in charge. This is your time. You get to decide what we do. And then you let them choose to do something active while talking if they want to. Now, there will eventually be kids that stop doing activities when they realize that they're okay with just talking to you. I've had kids still choose to come into the playroom and they just lay Bobo on its side and sit on the biggest end of Bobo as a seat. And they just sit on Bobo and talk the whole time. So they eventually might choose to talk the entire time, but you've never forced or insisted or encouraged that. So I think the premise of their hands doing something will make them more likely to speak. That's really helpful. Secondly, the most crucial piece of handling this with that tween teen population is explaining options. What I mean by that is when a child comes back, they're going to see baby dolls and bottles and doctor kits and Legos and Lincoln Logs and all these things that they haven't played with in 10 years. And there will immediately be hesitancy and resistance. So it's very important for that age range to just be very clear, very transparent, and very upfront. And what I advocate saying is something along the lines of, this is where we hang out for an hour each week. And I just want you to know, I see kids as young as three. So there's a lot of stuff in here for really young kids. But there's a lot of stuff in here for kids your age too. So when you come in, you get to be in charge and you get to decide what we do. And if you choose to talk to me the whole time, we talk. If you choose to play with something the whole time, we play. And if you choose to talk and play, it's completely up to you. You're in charge when you're here. But I want you to know there are other kids your age that come here and there are things in this room that are appropriate for you. So once you make that clear, there's far less resistance because they know you're not expecting them to play with baby dolls. And as long as you have board games and card games and art supplies and a ball and a Bobo, those are things that older kids like. So many of my teens play board games with me. Not because I suggest it, not because I expect them to, but after they've talked to me for 20 or 30 minutes, they go, "You want to play Uno?" And then we start playing Uno and we keep talking. So it is still playful. It is still child-centered. It is still non-directive. I've never once told a kid we should play a card game so you're going to talk to me more. They choose it just like a child chooses to come in and build a marble track. So explaining options really, really matters because it eliminates the frustrations and the perceived barriers. And then another consideration is you do need to make sure that you have things that are appropriate for older kids. So more complicated toys. So I have a couple of like balancing toys. I have a couple of brain teaser toys. I have some pretty complicated puzzles and complicated games. You want to make sure you do have 10 to 14 year old appropriate things in there. Balls are a given. Bot bag is a given. Cards are a given. And then you want to have some more challenging things that your younger kids would never be able to do. You also want to have some board games that are specifically for like 12 and up. Because you want it to be very clear, these are reserved for your age, just like the baby doll is reserved for younger kids. So you do have to have a comprehensive amount of options for the tweens and teens. And then my final thought is, even with activities and or talking. So if you have a tween or a teen that comes in and they decide they want to play a game, you know, Don't Break the Ice is a favorite, Candyland is a favorite. They're kind of mindless games that you don't really have to think while you play. So they're really well suited for talking. And so when you have those types of games or activities, by the way, also any kind of art. So the scratch art, the color by number art, the, you know, any kind of just like mindless art activity that you're not really thinking about. Teens typically like that because it's a little more concrete. It's a little more logical. You know, blank pieces of paper and blank canvases are great for really imaginative, creative younger kids. But teens get a little bit stuck in wanting more concrete directives. So when there's something that they can sit and just kind of like follow by number or scratch, the scratch art things are really fun for a lot of the teens. So once you have those types of options and once they choose them, you don't deviate from your approach even when a child chooses to talk to you. It's really no different than a six-year-old that comes in and talks to you about everything under the sun while they play. So even with a teen or a tween, you're not going to change your responses. You will still be child-centered in nature. You will still reflect feelings. You will still use encouragement. You will still fall back on the principles that you know. You will provide choices when appropriate. You're not going to lead the conversation. You're not going to direct what the topics are. You're not going to give advice. You're not going to teach lessons. You're not going to do anything other than respond in the same way you would to a younger child. It's just the topics are going to be more complex and more mature. So even if you move into talk with kids that are older, even if you're doing an activity and having a lot of dialogue, your responses will still be aligned with the child-centered model. And several of you asked that, do we still consider that CCPT? Yes, because we're essentially following all of the same principles and skills. We just happen to have a child that is more verbal. And trust me, you'll have a 10-year-old that'll come in and talk your ear off and talk about everything under the sun. And you're like, whoa, you're only 10. I can't believe it. But it doesn't change the way you respond. And so we don't change the way we respond with our teens and tweens either. So Naka, Anna, Grace, thank you so much for reaching out, talking about how do we handle this with older kids. I think that's really helpful, especially when we don't always have the option of limiting it to 12 and under. So what do we do with those 12 to 15-year-olds? We need to be prepared and we need to know how to effectively communicate what to expect and what that's going to look like. So I appreciate you. I want to spend a brief second, first of all, thanking you for emailing me, thanking you for being a part of this community. I shared in last week's episode, this is so meaningful and fulfilling and rewarding for me. So I'm super grateful, and I hope that you are just continued to feel inspired and encouraged and excited and passionate and all the things that child-centered play therapy does to us when it gets a hold of our hearts. I wanted to make you aware of something, though. I'm actually really excited. If you go to playtherapypodcast.com, we are actively rebooting our newsletter. And historically, I've had, you know, thousands of people on my newsletter list, and it has been specifically geared for parents. And we're actually going to reboot this and make this specifically for therapists and clinicians only. So if you go to playtherapypodcast.com, there will be a space in there for you to give me your email address. You know me, I'm trustworthy, I'm value driven, and I give you a lot of helpful content. So I will not spam you, I will not send you junk that you don't want. But there are times when I want to be able to send out content that doesn't really fit on a podcast episode. So I will be very selective with what I send you. You know me, you know that you can trust that what I'm going to give you is valuable. So if you would like to be on my newsletter, it will be for therapists only. It will be child-centered play therapy only. Just stuff that doesn't always work to do on an episode. Go to playtherapypodcast.com and you can sign up there. And we are excited to launch that. I've had parents following my newsletter for, gosh, almost 20 years. No, maybe not that long. Maybe almost 10 years. And I'm just excited because the play therapy podcast community is so invested and so engaged, and you all are hungry and you're excited. And that's the kind of group that is really, you know, looking forward to getting stuff via podcasts and newsletters. So I want to give both to you. So reach out to me, Brenna@thekidcounselor.com. Go to playtherapypodcast.com to sign up for the newsletter, and we will talk again soon. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks. For more episodes and resources, please go to www.playtherapypodcast.com.